I want people to, when they watch lacrosse, not only like the game, but feel like they're back playing sports again. Because that's a feeling a lot of people never get anymore. It's like, I just don't feel like I can get that same competitive level of juice anymore. And I want people to be able to watch our games and feel that.
What's up, folks? Welcome to episode one of Coming Up Podcast. I'm Matt Schumacher. My first guest this week is Mike Rabel, a self-described serial entrepreneur who successfully launched and scaled a number of businesses from investment to fitness, but his most recent venture is the Premier Lacrosse League, which he co-founded and launched with his brother Paul back in 2019. And although the PLL has only been around for about a year and a half now, it's already differentiated itself as one of the most innovative and creative sports leagues in the world. For example, they have the highest social media engagement of any sports league in the world. They have given fans unprecedented access to the league via social media and reimagining the traditional linear broadcast. Players are considered part owners in the business. In fact, they get stock options for each game that they play. And nowhere else in the world, I don't care what sports league we're talking about, can you consider players part owners in the business. But as Mike talks about throughout the course of our conversation, they imagine the PLL as more than a sports league, but as a startup, and it's run as such, and it's growing rapidly. And Mike Rabel is a big reason for that. Throughout our conversation, Mike and I talk about a range of topics from the league's social media initiative and the big prank they played on the Twitter world a couple of weeks ago for April Fool's, introducing a new lacrosse club called Dean's Lacrosse Club as the eighth addition to the league. We also discuss his vision for the league going forward and how he developed this innovative mindset that he's brought to the business, what leadership looks like in this time of uncertainty, and how Mike leads every day. And one of my favorite topics that we touch on is the Rabel recipe for success, or one of the secrets to success for Mike Rabel. So here we go. It's episode one, coming up with Mike Rabel. All right, welcome to the show, Mike Rabel in the house. And as usual, Premier Lacrosse League staying in the headlines. Last week, you guys played a big trick on everybody, announced the addition of an eighth team in the Premier Lacrosse League called Beans Lacrosse Club, as in baked beans, with the slogan dropping bombs, and this nasty brown color as part of the color scheme for the team. How on earth did you come up with baked beans as a team name, and how did the joke play out?
You know, I think it's a combination of two things. One, it was April Fool's, so it was an opportunity to provide some levity into the world a little bit. You know, I did have a couple board members reach out to me and say, "Hey, we didn't approve and we didn't talk about this eighth expansion team." I said, "Guys, it's okay. It's April 1st," and quickly dissipated, and we were good. So that was the first and most important thing. And then on the bean side of things, It was actually sort of a user-generated content idea where we were reaching out to fans saying, "Hey, what should before we launched the actual Water Dogs, which is an actual team name, we were looking at getting fans to give us recommendations." And I think there was a fan who said, "Hey, why don't you guys call one of the teams the Beans?" And it kind of stuck, and it started getting some traction on social. And so we thought about sort of what's the best way to revitalize this name, and it was a good sort of April Fool's play. It went over pretty well. So that was the story there. I don't know, there may be some baked beans on sale in the future for the PLL. We'll see how it goes.
I gotta be honest. You guys had me fooled. I mean, you were on social media with a beans t-shirt. I was like, there's no way, but maybe, and you got me.
Maybe. All right. Maybe one day.
You would be the first professional sports league, I think, with a food related name.
Yeah. And we might do it. Stay tuned, man.
I wouldn't put anything past the PLL. All right. So also last week, President Trump came out saying that he had talked with a bunch of professional sports commissioners around the country and said that he hopes to have fans back in arenas and stadiums by August or September. So what does that mean for you guys, for the PLL, a tour-based league where you bring the sports league to the fans in various cities?
Yeah, it's one of the more complex puzzles I've been a part of in my career. But I think first and foremost, the most important thing is we follow the regulatory environment at the federal and the state level. And that's because we want to keep our players and fans and colleagues that travel each weekend throughout the season safe. There's still not a ton of information. We're learning every day more about the coronavirus. And so, and we're making sure that whatever decision we make sometime in the beginning of May, it is one that keeps in mind the health and safety of everyone. So I know it's not a direct answer, but it's hard to give concrete answers when we're living in this, once in a century type of pandemic. So that's how we're thinking about things. Whatever we do, we'll make sure that there's some semblance of a PLL season to keep the fans and entertaining the players and all the hard work they've been doing in the off season and all my colleagues and all the work we've been preparing. So we put something out there, but we're going to have to make sure it's safe and healthy for everyone.
So how are you sort of traversing this situation right now while also trying to figure out how you're going to get your season started?
Yeah, it's trying to find optimism every day is like a new goal of mine, just because the general global climate is not the normal state, right? I think this is an opportunity for anyone who's leading anything, whether their own life, a family, a company, any sort of business. It's an opportunity for us to say, okay, where were we during this time? And how did I lead during that time? And unfortunately, there's not a lot of examples out there, right? I've been trying to like scour the internet, pick up books about how to lead a group through uncertain times and in the abstract with you having completely no idea what tomorrow is going to bring. And so that's been challenging. I think every single day is, like I said, a new data set that we get. And then also just trying to figure out sort of what the next week is going to look like.
You mentioned trying to find ways to lead in times of uncertainty. How have you approached leading employees who don't know what tomorrow brings, but understand that you're trying to build a league right now that's only really still in its infancy?
Yeah, it's a great question. So I've been searching a lot for this. I've been trying to, like I said, read or follow other, great leaders and trying to pick up information that maybe they tell to, whether they tell their following base on social or they've written blog posts about. But unfortunately, like I said, this is once in a century type of pandemic that we're in right now. So there's not a lot of people that have experienced things like this. And I remember this book I read called Endurance about Ernest Shackleton. And he was a British voyager who explored a lot of Antarctica. And I was thinking about those voyages. And I read this book, man, like 6 years ago. And I was like, man, I should dust that thing off and see if there's any like tidbits there, right? Because like, taking 20 people on a boat in the early 1900s to Antarctica and try to explore it is kind of what we're going through. You don't know if you're going to hit an iceberg one day. You don't know if you're going to run out of food. You don't know if you're ever going to reach Antarctica, right? And so I was thinking about that and kind of thinking about the unknown, just the uncharted waters that we're on as a company and where we're in and sort of as a world. And so some of the stuff I pulled was just from what Ernest did is he talked a lot to his team about what the mission was. He was like, we are headed to do this, to discover Antarctica. And then eventually the big one that he did was he wanted to travel through Antarctica and travel across the Atlantic. And so, I got on the call and then this was a couple of weeks ago, and I just reminded the team of that. I said, I talk a lot about our company values, but I don't talk about our mission statement enough. And, I don't know what tomorrow is going to bring, but I do know that we are scenario planning. Here are the scenarios that we are planning for. We are all in this together. Everyone wears lots of hats. So all of you are valuable.
One thing that you've said a lot throughout the course of your career as a self-described serial entrepreneur is that your key to success is working with people who are more talented than you. And you just mentioned, your 39 employees who all wear a lot of hats and their value to the continuing success and growth of this business that is the Premier Lacrosse League. So I'm curious, A, when did you really become aware of this idea that you're working with people who are more talented than you? And B, how do you work to maintain that structure?
Good question. I'll give you sort of answer A and then answer B. When did I first realize this is something that, when was I working with people who are more talented than me, I guess is the better way of framing it. And it was back in 2011, myself and three other partners started a small holding company, and our first project was these gyms that we were building, and then we built an online lending business. But I found myself every Monday morning when the four of us met in a room, feeling like the dumbest one in the room. And that was tough for me because I was surrounded by these three people who were incredibly bright. And I just felt like, why did they want to work with me? Right? Like what was it about me that they could possibly want? I was not bringing as much to this conversation as they were. I did not have as much experience as they did. And you know, they're all Stanford Business School graduates. And here I was just trying to keep up with them every day. And so what that did is it led me to sort of a self-actualization process where I actually went to therapy about this deep insecurity that I was sort of a clinger. And I was hanging on to this group of people that wanted to work with me for some reason and called themselves my business partner, but I had no idea why. And so through that, those therapy sessions, I kind of got an ability. This answers, this goes to your question B around how do you go about the process? But it led me to evaluating myself and what my strengths and weaknesses are as a human and as a leader. And obviously we can always work on our weaknesses, but some of them are just inherent and they'll always be our weaknesses. And so it was confidence building within myself, figuring out what my strengths were and figure out what my weaknesses were, and then applying those to a business, right? And so where are my weaknesses when I run a business? And those weaknesses are holes I need to fill with people that have strengths in those areas. So that's kind of how I go about it. And, you know, constantly just evaluating myself and evaluating the people around us, but really trying to find those folks that fill in the weaknesses.
Two things jump out to me about that. Number one is you just said it, you constantly are reevaluating yourself and seeing what your weaknesses are and what your strengths are, what you can work on, what you can't work on. How do you go about doing that? Is that just a daily reflection, or do you set aside time every week, every month? What does your process look like for reevaluating yourself?
The best way to get feedback kind of, or to reflect and identify those weaknesses like you're talking about, is to really just be vulnerable and ask for feedback from people, which is super hard to do. And even for myself, but it's like, you know, after a meeting that I led that I didn't feel I was essentially as on point, or maybe I was distracted. I'll ask someone on the team. I'll ask Paul, you know, my brother and co-founder. I'll ask our COO, who I was just talking about. I'll ask our head of strategy. Walk out of a meeting, I'll say, hey, what'd you think about that? How did I do? Right? And a lot of times I have to push them harder, right? And they'll say, oh, it was great. And I'll say, well, what do you think? What do you really think? You know, I thought this. Mm-hmm. I didn't think I was great here. And then I'll kind of lead them and try to push them, and then they'll give me some feedback. So I find a lot of like peer evaluation on the spot immediately. So there's an example to drive into, and asking for it allows me to get better. And just trying to be less defensive in general in life. So if I do get feedback from anyone, whether it's just like how I'm carrying myself, if I'm posturing differently in meetings, I mean, I think one of the things about being, you know, a leader or leading a business is everyone's watching you all the time. And so I remind like our up and coming managers that I have to remind myself of that every day when I walk in, and if I'm in a mood or if I'm feeling down or if I'm feeling happy, like to not over index in a certain way. People want consistency. And so knowing that, you know, I've had feedback in my life that I'm inconsistent, that I come in one day and I'm super high, one day and I'm super low. And so how I think about it is, how do I provide consistency based on that feedback in a day in, day out, but then also be authentic? So long-winded, rambly way of saying, you know, ask your peers and people that are you close with you or interact with you a lot. How do you come off? How did you just come off? What can you do to get better? And I find that's the best way for me, at least, to get that instant feedback.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. I mean, it, definitely in the industry in which I work, you know, sports play-by-play, I'm constantly sending out tapes for critiques, but I also think that can go even deeper into life. And you kind of touched on that too. Just how are you coming off? You know, how are people perceiving you? How are people thinking that you can be a better leader? Things of that nature.
One thing I want to say on that for you guys, and you know, you're in the business of building your brand, your talent, and we have talent that we grow at the PLL. And one of the things, and I'm not like an expert talent manager, but I've seen some of the talent that's grown at the PLL, and they do exactly what you're saying. And sort of the best talent that we've been able to see are the ones that have the thickest skin and are willing to try new things, right? And to see what sticks. And so, and they're open to feedback, and they watch themselves and they want their peers to give them feedback on how did I do on this vlog, or how did I do on the set, or how did I do? And a lot of it comes down to preparation. A lot of it comes down to like being okay with getting feedback and having that thick skin. So the fact that you're doing that, you're already going to be able to separate yourself.
All right. So PLL, let's talk about it a little bit more, because that's, you know, that's your baby right now. Year two of a new venture with your brother. You guys have given fans unprecedented access, really, to the league and its players. You've reimagined what a traditional linear broadcast looks like for a sports league. And then just in terms of the way you relate to your players, I mean, these guys are looked at as part owners almost. You give them financial stake in the business. They receive stock options for games that they play in. So there's so many new ways that this league is differentiating itself from the rest of the pack.
And so I'm wondering what experiences from earlier in your career sort of shaped this innovative forward thinking that you've brought to the PLL.
I was really lucky to work in Silicon Valley where, and some people feel differently about this, but I was pretty fortunate to be at a place where sort of the epicenter of building things from scratch. And when you do that, you're able to reimagine a legacy business industry operating plan from scratch and challenge the way things have been done for decades, if not longer. And so, I had the benefit of that sort of intellectual thinking and that intellectual framework. And that's just like the standard of operating out there. It's like, let's reimagine banking. Let's reimagine consumer purchasing. Let's reimagine social media. And so I think that the fact that I was able to come from that background and sort of reimagine sports at just a baseline level allowed us to say, okay, and challenge and say, why can't we do this? And then really think about at the core, what are your biggest assets if you're in sports? It's the players. And so if that's the truth, if the players are the biggest assets, and if I can draw an analogy to a company, what's the biggest asset if I'm building a company? It's the technology you build and the employees that are working there. And so I just saw the separation of players, and major sports players get paid a lot, and they shouldn't deserve so. But why don't they also get the upside in what they're building? And why can't? And how do we align ourselves more closely to them so we're all sort of rowing in the same direction? You just read so much about how players and ownership of players in the league are rowing in opposite directions, and so how do we streamline that and align everyone in a similar way? And so I thought that ownership in the PLL was a great way to do it, right? And it boils down to like a very simple conversation. It's like a player can challenge someone at the league and say, hey, I'm an owner too. This didn't feel like something. They felt like I was too separated from this decision. Or we can say, hey, player X, you're an owner in this league. Is this a type of message that you think would look good and reflect well on the team you're on or the league? And then be able to have that conversation with them is pretty powerful. It's not just about the money they are getting paid, but it's also about like ownership and the long-term vision of the league. And so I think that to me was like a baseline in sort of being able to provide players and the company with a similar value set.
How much of this idea of changing the landscape of professional sports, how much of that is driving you every day? Like, is that your ultimate goal here with this league, with this business?
Man, that's a good question. I don't think we're trying to necessarily change professional sports. That's not necessarily the goal, but it's to imagine things differently. And it's to say, okay, if this is the way it's traditionally done, why can't it be done this way? And if it aligns with our value set, then why can't we try to reimagine the broadcast differently? Why can't we try to reimagine player relationships differently? Why can't we reimagine, marketing and media the same way? Why can't we reimagine the assets we have and the partners and sponsors we bring on that market against those assets in a different way? And so I think that it's just like taking a different lens to every approach. And what gives us a sort of an advantage really is the fact that we're a company, we're single entity. Now, there's stress there because of it's capital intensive, but we have great investors. But at the same time, being a single entity company allows us to make very fast decisions. We empower our business unit leaders to drive those decisions. And we trust them to make the right ones because we're constantly talking about our values. We're constantly talking about mission statement. And allows us to pivot, you know, in uncertain times, allows us to test new things. It allows us to be lean week over week and say, hey, that didn't work. Let's try this new thing, or this really worked. Let's go long on that. And so that just that general testing environment is analogous to a lot of startups or fast moving companies where there's less bureaucracy, there's more movement, there's more progress made, and you're able to really make fast progress because you're able to test the things that work and the things that don't.
How do you, as somebody who's constantly building, constantly setting goals for yourself, how do you adapt when a situation out of your control potentially could change what that end goal looks like?
So, you know, I think that the thing that you have to remember is, you know, we're lucky that we are a single entity business that, again, there's not, you know, we have a board, obviously a board of governors who, you know, we have fiduciary responsibility to, and we run sort of all major decisions through, but, you know, there are not too many stakeholders. And so we are able to pivot based on the environment. I'll give you an example of a pivot we've just recently made. And you have to always make sure that your team knows that's okay, right? So one of our values at the PLL is encourage creativity, and just that value in itself. Not only does encourage mean that like everyone should be on board for creative thought, but it also means that, you know, that hopefully we can refrain from too much groupthink. So if someone has a creative thought, we're encouraging them to speak up. Right. And so, you know, we think that collaborative debate is the best way to make any decision. And so that keeps us malleable, that keeps us flexible. If something like this happens, and then with our general structure as an organization, it allows us to do that as well. And so, you know, when I'll give you an example of that quickly, but we have a business vertical called PLL Academy. We run camps and clinics for, you know, the next emerging athlete in lacrosse. And, you know, we connect them with our pros, and our pros are running camps and clinics on behalf. So they get instruction and clinics from the best players in the world. And we also have overnights that we run as well. And so, you know, we thought about, okay, we're having to stop these events right now because of the COVID scare. So at the same time, people still want the interaction with humans. We are social people, and we want that instruction. Just because the world shut down for a little while doesn't mean that someone doesn't want to continue, you know, the skill progress that they're making or stay in shape. And so, you know, I was thinking about, I got this text from a client, a potential client, and she was asking me if we had any athletes in Baskin Ridge, New Jersey. And I was like, I have no clue. I got to go text like five of our guys that I know are from New Jersey. And then this idea popped up in my head, and I was like, wouldn't it be great if I could just send her a link and say, go here, click on this map, click on this instruction, click on this type of service, and we'll come back to you with, you know, four or five athletes who could do those things. And then you guys can pick one, and then we'll make the connection, right? And then there's a fee charged, and we could take a little small percentage of that, and the athlete gets the majority of it, right? But we make it very simple. And so more opportunities would come through that streamlined process. And so we actually rolled out 2 weeks later, and the team did all the work. But they rolled out a new program called PLL Connect, and we were able to just pop that out inside of 2 weeks. So that just shows you the flexibility and creativity that we try to drive.
And the open-mindedness, you know, looking yep. for opportunity, or being open to opportunity in the face of trial. You've built so many businesses. You've had so much success. Now you're pivoting to this sort of new venture. You know, you have, I'm guessing, a handful of mentors, but who has been most influential? If you could pick one.
Man, pick one. You forced me to say one. I was going to say it's impossible, but I'll try to give you one. I'd say, like, people always say their family, and my family is definitely up there. You know, my dad and my mom.
Yeah.
And then my brother, working with him, and my sister are super influential. I'd say the first person who ever hired me at a company called Jones Lang LaSalle, and it's Bill Magner, and I still talk to him. Probably a quarterly basis, but I haven't even seen him in 4 years, but we still keep in touch. And he was the president of the Mid-Atlantic for Jones Lang LaSalle, and he hired me, and I used to watch him, right? Because he was so polished and he'd walk around. He would be the last guy in the office. He'd walk around. He'd always have a tie on. And he would walk around to see who else was going to be at the office. And he would never call people out for not being there, but he would just like, it was like keeping a mental record of everyone. He was never condescending. He was always positive, but you could tell he had this like edge and drive and ambition to him that he would keep behind sort of the facade of what people called him Dollar Bill, because he was also well put together. But I could always see he was keeping track. And so I would always stay late just so he could see me, even if I had nothing to work on as an analyst. and then throughout my career there, he would take me to breakfast every 6 months, and we would go to the U Club, and he would take me. And I mean, I was a lowly analyst and he was the president, and there was no reason for him to do that. And so I try to remind myself a lot of that is like, for whatever reason, he saw something in me, and I don't know what he saw, but he saw something, and he would just spend his time with me. And I think a lot of executives are always doing like, you know, I got to spend time with people that are smarter than me, or I got to spend time with the other executives. But he was always spending time with me. So I try to do that with folks now, is that no matter who they are in the organization or in the company, it's just try to like get them to know them a little bit better, to give my time to them if I can, and if they want it. And really just try to take that approach, because it can have a long lasting influence on someone, and it helps with their self-esteem and confidence. You know, if someone like Bill Magner cares about me, 22-year-old Mike Rabel analyst, you know, there was a reason for that, and it helped me kind of get to where I am now. So he's a big influence on me.
That's a cool story. All right, last one. Let's plug year two of the PLL. What are you most excited for in year two?
I mean, you know, to be honest with you, man, I'm excited about a couple of things that are going to drive more engagement to television. You know, we were known for year one of really giving unprecedented access to the field, and that's what we want to drive. I mean, we were the first sports league ever to bring, during a competitive game, like a non-all-star game, microphones inside the helmets and to interview players while they're playing or during a break of action while the game's still going on, right? And so we have a couple other elements we're bringing to the broadcast that will bring people even more into the field of play. I want people to, when they watch lacrosse, not only like the game, but feel like they're back playing sports again, because that's a feeling a lot of people never get anymore. It's like, I just don't feel like I can get that same competitive level of juice anymore. And I want people to be able to watch our games and feel that. So we have a couple elements there. We're working on some pretty big things on the sports betting side of the world. I mean, obviously that industry is taking a hit right now with COVID, just there's just been no action. So that's difficult for them, but we're working on some pretty big partnerships there that hopefully we'll be able to launch. So we'll be able to get sort of the less avid lacrosse fan to engage. The last thing I'm excited for is the gameplay. I mean, these guys are champing at the bit here, ready to get back on the field. And I think that now there is rivalries. There's beef between guys. The stakes have been risen a bit, and the players know the sort of the value that we bring, the national audience that they get with NBC, and how meaningful it is to a team and to an organization to win a championship. And so I think that the guys are going to be playing even harder. I know they are. Roster spots are going to be even more coveted with a great draft that we just had of guys that left other pro leagues to join us, and then this college draft coming up. So the competition is going to be elevated, and I think that you're going to see this new level of lacrosse play that people haven't seen before.
Well, I am certainly excited to see it when that season starts, hopefully soon. For those of you listening who are curious about updates and want to learn a little bit more about the Premier Lacrosse League, you can check them out on Twitter @PremierLacrosse. Mike Rabel, thanks, man.
Thanks, brother. I appreciate it.